It's an almost impossible task because he does such a wonderful job of processing my piano, so it's more of an homage than anything else.
Thank you. Gregory Hall, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Oh, Eleanor Sandresky. We have not actually had the privilege of having you as a guest on the show. You were, I know, isn't this, it's one of those passing in the night kind of things. We had a wonderful performance at the Ottawan Festival of Non-Pop
yes.
in 2001, and it's been that many years since you've been back here.
It has been
that
many
years. It has
years.
Been that long. So, oh, you want to turn that fan off?
Yeah.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Oh,
just to take that, the middle piece?
Ah.
It rotates. Sorry about that.
All right, did you want to tell anything about what you're about to do?
I'm going to play some selections from a set of pieces of mine called Strange Energies. And these are pieces that are meant to interact with the space in a particular way. So the first one is about sound decaying in the room. And the second one is about sound building up.
All right. Eleanor Sandresky here on Cal Listen Damien's 20th anniversary celebration.
Thank you. Thank you.
Leonardo Sandreski, amazing. I really won't be able to compose anything for at least another, I don't know, year. Brilliant, absolutely brilliant. You're working on something. You're doing something here. You're performing.
So I've been told.
So I'm going to give this to you momentarily.
I think someone has to explain this.
He's going to explain, but before you, since this will be the last thing on the program tonight, I just once again want to thank everyone that's been involved in this, including all the performers, Ty Burnell, who had to leave, children, and Peter Cassino, who worked with him, Eve Baglari, and Neil Rolnick, and oh gosh, I have to look because it's such a bit. And Beth Griffith, of course, and John McGuire, Gregory Hall, and Eleanor, of course, who you just heard, and now David Morneau. And of course, thanks to all the people who made this possible. Zona Hostetler, who was the wrangler for our team of people who fed us and helped us remain sane, and all the people that worked on this with us, Caleb Boardman, Benj Spound, Zach Hartling, Megan McCormick, Chelsea Gibbs, and who am I missing here? Anybody? And David Morneau himself, who helped with the setup. David Furland, magic maker who makes this all happen. Jim Cross and station manager Chris Gruen, who allowed us to be here. And everyone else. Did I forget anybody?
Yes.
You.
What?
I'll hand this over momentarily to David Morneau, and you'll take us out with blow the roof off here.
Yes. When I appeared on Cowboys and Damien in the House in December of 2008, they opened the show with this wonderful essay about a robot who sells shoes. And as a tribute to them, and as a celebration of them tonight, I created a piece based on this essay, which I will be performing on these two vintage Nintendo Game Boys, and David Gunn has graciously agreed to read the original story with me while we play.
Yeah, sure. Shoe Shop prided itself on being one of the most cutting-edge footwear stores on all of South Klondike Street. The owner, Dean Dino Tinkerlock, never carried a shoe style that was more than a week old. His sales personnel knew their merchandise so intimately that they all took vows of celibacy during working hours to keep their marriages intact. A giant animatronic shoe at the door greeted customers, announced the daily specials, and dandled kids on its tongue. When Dino installed a robot shoe salesman and laid off Bob and Eugene, who'd worked in the store for decades, some customers thought he'd pushed his avant-garde philosophy too far. However, they were in the minority. Most shoppers deemed the mechanical man, who was named Florsheim, the grooviest gadget they'd ever seen. Lockerdick liked him because he had outstanding time management skills. Using state-of-the-art laser technology, Florsheim could accurately measure a person's foot and produce the perfect fitting shoe within seconds. And usually only another minute was needed to close the sale. Dino's sole reservation, in fact, was that Florsheim had an eye for the ladies, almost to the exclusion of his equally important male clientele. tape last Tuesday morning, for example. Three men entered the store at the same time. In a flash, Florsheim had measured their dogs and was off to fetch the appropriate footwear. But when a willowy blonde sashayed through the door, the mechanical man seemed to instantly forget all about his gentleman patrons. Florsheim eschewed the laser foot measurement process in favor of a hands-on approach, and his carapace reddened noticeably as he caressed the woman's tootsies. One of the men, annoyed at being ignored, tried to get the robot's attention by flinging a shoehorn at him. Florsheim may have sensed danger, for he shot the implement out of the air with his laser ray. Unfortunately, he did not employ a focused beam, and all four customers were promptly reduced to collateral damage. The robot, meanwhile, continued to try to sell the red stiletto heels to what was now a steaming mound of fused bones. Incident did cause a backlash among Lagerdink's less forgiving customer base, and the attendant negative publicity forced Lagerdink to get rid of Florsheim. Oh, he didn't dismantle him, as Bob and Eugene had demanded. The shoemaker just shipped the robot off to his brother, Dr. Moreau, a physiologist who ran a research facility and spa for composers on an uncharted island in what is now the Mediterranean Sea. Florsheim arrived on the island to find the doctor conducting vivisection experiments on the composers. By reversing the Doppler fields in their neurofibril transmuters, Moreau hoped to dampen the composers' predilection for E minor triads and stimulate their dormant non-pop sensibilities. It was hard work. The composers, most of them, proved to be resistant to change. They clung stubbornly to their E's, G's, and B-naturals, citing tradition and harmony and royalties. Are we not men? They yell as the doctor drilled holes in their craniums during the pre-vivisection trepanation process, after which he poked around in the dura mater looking for the forceps he had invariably dropped. The answer, by the way, was no, not technically. Island, anyway, once you sign the form declaring your composerness, You lost all legal claims of humanity. Not so very different from how the rest of the world views Hughes' composers, actually. His occasional outbursts of Eureka, to the contrary, Moreau's experiments were disastrous. Not only did the altered tunesmiths fail to embrace the Vox non populi, many of them couldn't even conceptualize any minor triads afterwards. So the doctor's low spirits were instantly buoyed when Florsheim waded ashore. At last, an individual worth vivisecting, he thought, as he idly bought a pair of penny loafers from the mechanical man. Failure, however, continued to be the operative word for Moreau's experiments. He broke three costly trepanators unsuccessfully trying to penetrate Florsheim's protactinium-hardened cranial unit. Then he discovered that the robot didn't even have a neurofibril transmitter, let alone a Doppler field. He did, however, have a splendid pair of ski boots that the doctor simply had to have, no matter their impracticality for the island's subtropical clime. Moreau's fortune began to change at last when he went to pay for this extravagance. As he inserted the correct number of coins into Florsheim's payment slot, he became aware of a low electromagnetic subvocalization issuing from the nether regions of the robot's carapace. It was so deep that Moreau could detect it only on a subatomic level. But most significant was that it sounded not unlike non-pop music. The physiologist was so inspired and immediately began to devise a new series of experiments. For the vivisected composers had heard it too. Each reacted as any tunesmith with a hole in his head would. He followed the sound. And when they had cornered Florsheim in the island's laboratory, the robot acted as if he had been programmed and tried to sell them all shoes. None of the composers on the island had any money, but another similarity to the real world. So the mechanical man accessed his oft-used plan B and employed his laser ray to cull the herd. And that's when things really started to get out of hand. And that wraps up another 20th century or 20th anniversary. 20th century.
Yes.
Go back a century or two.
And see you in 20 years. Thank you very much.
We'll do this in 15.
Okay.
Next time, the Medicare version of Calvin's.